Hello and welcome to the Microbiomedics Podcast. I'm Dr. Siobhan McCormack.
And I'm Dr. Sheena Fraser, and we're your co-hosts.
We are both GPs and lifestyle medics with a shared passion for microbiome science, and we have spent the last 5 years deep diving into the world of the gut microbiome.
We've been analysing the evidence, appraising the studies, speaking to the experts, and writing the Gut Microbiome for Clinicians e-learning course for the BSLM Learning Academy.
We have discovered that the gut and other human microbiomes are pivotal to every aspect of your health and physiology, and the pillars of lifestyle medicine hold the key.
So in these Microbiomedic podcasts, we'll be covering the basics, bringing you the latest research and talking to the experts on all matters microbiome.
We'll be translating the evidence and packaging it into actionable, bite-sized chunks so that you can harness the power of the microbiome to improve your own health and that of your patients. Hello and a very warm welcome to episode 4 of Microbiomedics Podcast. I am Dr. Siobhan McCormack, and this episode is entirely devoted to fermented foods and their role in our health. So if you don't know your kombucha from your kimchi or your sourdough from your sauerkraut, you have come to the right place. Now, I'm speaking to you from rural Shropshire, and thanks to the wonders of modern technology, I'm joined from Glasgow by my co-host and fellow microbiome nerd, Dr. Sheena Fraser. Now, Sheena and I are really excited today to have our first podcast guest, who's also from Glasgow and is sitting beside Sheena right now. That is Janice Klein. Janice is uniquely qualified to help us with today's subjects. She has a master's in nutrition. She's a former research food scientist. She's a mum of four girls, a passionate foodie, a blogger, an obsessive fermenter, a forager, an educator, a teacher, and an advocate of fermented foods and plant-based diets. No surprise then that she's been dubbed the queen of fermenting in her hometown. So Janice has founded Nourished by Nature, which she describes as a space to share unbiased nutrition and health information, empowering people to make better informed choices for their own health. In her spare time, she runs workshops, talks, events on all aspects of fermenting and gut health. She's also got a YouTube channel and is active on Instagram and Facebook. And recently, she's putting us to shame because she's also launched a membership website called The Wellness Hub. It's actively growing an online community of empowered, engaged, informed, and inspired people who are all on a personal journey to their best health. So hello there, Janice and Sheena.
Hi. Hi, Siobhan.
That was a lovely introduction. Thank you very much.
Just before we get started and before I hand over to you both, I thought it's probably important to explain what fermented foods are and why we've chosen to devote a whole podcast to them. So just as a reminder to those people who are new to the Microbiomedics podcast, microbiomes are collections of microorganisms plus their surrounding habitat in a specified location. Now, many of you may know about the gut microbiome. This is the largest and most researched human microbiome. It's mostly bacteria. It's mostly in the colon. But there's also fungi and archaea and protists and other microbes. And these microbes utilize undigested nutrients and bioactives to make metabolites that impact every aspect of our physiology and health. Now, when we think about food fermentation, that also involves the action of live microbes with food, but it takes place outside the gut, essentially. So I'm going to bore you a bit with a formal definition from ICEP 2021. Now, ICEP is an important body. It's the International Scientific Advisory Committee on Probiotics and Prebiotics. So they're trying to sort of direct definitions in this area to help nutritionists and doctors work out what to do best for patients. So they describe fermented foods as foods made through desired microbial growth and enzymatic conversion of food components. Now, that might get straight over your head, but any university students listening, leaving half-eaten pizzas in sock drawers for 6 weeks is not fermented food. That's just moldy pizza. It's covered in pathogenic bacteria, and you need to bin it. That's a message from my son, Finn, who is at university as we speak. So fermented food is microbial growth. It's deliberate. It's controlled. It's planned. You want a desired outcome. Now, the history of fermented foods dates back thousands of years. Initially, they weren't thinking about health benefits. They were trying to preserve food for long periods of time, so increasing its shelf life, essentially. So instead of wasting food and it going off, food could be stored for a long time and could be used in lean times when, after the harvest or halfway through the year. Now, fermented foods has an antimicrobial quality. It alters the pH. These bacteria and fungi produce antimicrobials like bacteriocins, which have antibiotic-like qualities. But also you get an alteration in the taste and the texture that can be desirable, and the digestibility of food. So, for example, with kefir, which is a dairy fermented food, it can alter and make it more easy to tolerate lactose, and it helps break it down. So that can be good for people who've got lactose intolerance. But this idea of it being beneficial is a newer concept. So Mechnikov, the zoologist and immunologist at the beginning of the 20th century, he studied Bulgarian peasants and attributed their health and longevity to the yogurt consumption, the large amounts of yogurt they had every day. And he found it contained Bulgarian bacteria, which we now know as Lactobacillus rucki. And he had this idea that these could be beneficial microbes and that they were very important to health. And I guess, Sheena and I, we've spoken about this before, that this whole idea of beneficial microbes has dropped around this time because of the germ theory of disease, the peaking of sort of antibiotics, and the idea that all bugs were bad. And it's only really in the last sort of 10 to 20 years that there's been this resurgence in interest about the health benefits of fermented food. So I've got my kombucha here. Sheena knows I've started brewing kombucha because I got the most extraordinary Christmas present. I got given a SCOBY for Christmas. So it's kind of a really weird Christmas present, but I absolutely love it. And any of you who don't know what on earth I'm talking about, a SCOBY looks kind of a little bit like a jellyfish. I've got it sitting here beside me, and it's about, I don't know, about 20 centimeters in diameter. And it looks like a kind of a side plate. It's a few centimeters thick, and it's just this white, creamy, gelatinous sort of organism. And it stands for a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. And it's sitting in what I call straw-coloured liquid, but what my family call kind of urine, disgusting. What's it doing here, Mum? Take it away. I've got bottles of kombucha, which I brewed from this, but no one will drink it. And maybe, Janice, you can help us with this because they think I'm going to poison them. But, you know, I'm drinking it and I feel fantastic, but hey, I can't persuade them. So as we go through today, I'm just going to pass you over to Janice and Sheena in a second, but I'm sipping my kombucha. It's teeming with live microbes, but they're not passively, when I'm sort of brewing it, fermenting it, they're not floating around doing nothing. They're really busy little creatures. They're like little chemical factories. They're not just swimming around enjoying the weather. They're producing numerous metabolites using the raw materials I provided. So I put green tea and sugar in here. So they're making me vitamins, they're breaking down polyphenols, they're producing short-chain fatty acids, which are brilliant for health. Loads of antioxidants, and also it's an acidic pH, and that is, kills all the pathogens that might be there. So when I'm drinking it, and I'm sipping away now, I'm sipping live microbes plus all these incredible bioactive molecules that are going to activate numerous pathways in my body, affecting my immune system, my metabolism, my nervous system. So they've got wide-ranging impacts on physiology. So it's this complex interaction of microbes and the chemicals that the microbes have produced, and also what's happening with the food matrix. So there's hundreds of different types of fermented food and thousands of different subtypes, which I'm sure Janice is going to tell us about. Every country in the world has its own style. So most of us know about yogurt and kefir. So there's a dairy fermented foods, but you've also got your vegetables, your sauerkraut and your kimchi and your tempeh. So there's loads of them. So we can't get through all of them today, but I'm going to pass you over to Janice and Sheena to tell us more.
Thanks very much, Siobhan. That's a brilliant sort of sum up of fermented foods. And so now, I mean, we've got Janice here, and Janice really is the expert. And, you know, you'd be amazed at just how many things that Janice can ferment. It's really quite astounding. Her kitchen looks more like some sort of scientific laboratory. It's really amazing. So I think what we want to find out from Janice is more about, you know, the practicalities of all of this, and also, you know, what it really does for our health day to day, because she's a really good person to know about this with the community that she's built. So first of all, Janice, welcome. Lovely to have you here with us. And really, I always enjoy spending time with you. It's always really fascinating. So just first of all, if we go back to the start of your career, you started as a scientist working with processed foods and sort of, you know, it's quite an interesting transition for me to see that you've come from that kind of a background and now you're a massive advocate of whole foods and fermentation. So tell us how that transition came about.
Well, my scientific days actually go back to about 30 years ago, Sheena. So I did take quite a big break in between that to have my four kids. And I only discovered the sort of world of fermented foods when I started to study microbiotics. And that was in 2011. And that really brought home to me the link between our health and the food we were eating. Mm-hmm. It also introduced me to things like sauerkraut and to kimchi, to kombucha, and to all these things I had actually never heard of before. And I've always been interested in health and real food. I'm a massive proponent of seasonal food and eating well, but these foods just took it to the next level for me. And once I started to research them and started to, as you said, my kitchen's like a lab, I started to literally ferment everything. But it wasn't a kind of quick thing. I started with one thing, started to ferment vegetables, and then I would move on. Then I discovered kombucha. And the reason I discovered that was I came across an article, and it was Ronald Reagan at the time who had attributed drinking kombucha to curing his stomach cancer, which I thought was a bit of a big claim. But anyway, it did intrigue me, and I thought, I'm going to try it. So I also do kombucha. And then I started looking at the dairy, the kefir, and the different things like that as well. And then I started making sourdough. And now I just literally ferment everything because it's the most wonderful, magical world. It transforms foods into superfoods.
Yeah, it's amazing. And do you know, you did invite me for lunch a few weeks ago, and I have to say lunch was absolutely delicious. And I'm not a massive fan of a lot of fermented foods. I have to say, when I've had things like sauerkraut in the past, I haven't enjoyed them that much until I met you, Janice.
Yeah, well.
And we had, was it two or three different types of sauerkraut?
Yeah, I think we did. The one is probably the pineapple, turmeric and ginger one.
Okay.
That could convert anyone who doesn't like sauerkraut because it is so delicious.
But the sauerkrauts that I ate at your house just weren't massively strong in flavour. They were delicious and they really sort of enhanced the rest of the food on the plate. And we had sort of sweet potatoes and we had beautiful salad and, you know, all the foods really worked well together. And I was very interested in that because I've always sort of thought that they were awfully strong in flavour and, you know, quite difficult to eat in the past. So it's opened my eyes quite a bit to this. So could you just share with our listeners the sorts of fermented foods that you're consuming on a daily basis? And a little, you know, just sort of navigate your way around your kitchen and tell me about what you're doing at the moment fermentation wise.
Right. Okay. Well, I have to say every single day I eat numerous fermented things. Normally what I would do in the winter, I would have porridge. So at the moment it's still kind of porridge season. So I have kefir, which is the most probiotic food on the planet. It's like yogurt and steroids. If you make it yourself, it can have upwards of 40 different strains of bacteria and yeast. I make dairy kefir, which I use for my skin. I use it for my skincare, but I actually make organic soya kefir, which I prefer. Mm-hmm. So I usually would have that in porridge or have it in granola. In the summer, I use it in smoothies. You can put it in salad dressings, all sorts of things. I don't tend to heat that because if you heat anything that's probiotic, you destroy a lot of the probiotics. So that tends to be just added to things or had along with things. I have kombucha every morning. I have a massive selection of kombuchas. The kombucha that I have at the moment is blood orange kombucha.
Nice.
And I know Siobhan said that nobody would drink hers, but mine is absolutely outstandingly delicious. It's like you couldn't not drink it. It's so good.
What was the one that you gave me that we had the other day? That wasn't blood orange, was it?
No, because blood orange, they just come into season.
Yeah.
So I do all sorts of different
was
varieties.
The sea buckthorn?
Yes, it was probably.
Absolutely delicious.
Sea buckthorn and orange, because again, the thing is, as Siobhan said about all the benefits of kombucha, to me, kombucha works like an internal hoover. It continually cleanses toxins out of your system. It is the single best cure ever for a hangover because it clears alcohol out of your body really fast. And you can add so many different things to kombucha. So even though plain kombucha has got major benefits, you can add other things like sea buckthorn, which is like a superfood. It's incredible stuff for skin, hair and nails. You can add herbs to your kombucha like chamomile and lavender, and then you've got a slightly different kind of aspect and that affects your health in a different way. Going back to other things that I ferment, always have fermented veggies. Mm. I have a massive selection in my fridge. And if I'm not having porridge for breakfast, I'll be having sourdough with some kind of a dip or some kind of fermented cheese. And then I'll top it with something fermented. And I have quite a selection at the moment. My cupboard is full with beetroot, apple, caraway kraut. I've got a beetroot and cumin and garlic kraut because I got some really lovely organic beetroot. So I thought, right, I'm going to do that.
Wow.
And then I also have a massive crock full of pineapple, turmeric and ginger kraut that I need to get into jars. But I go through so many jars that I have run out of jars. So I have a jar problem. I need smaller jars because once you've fermented it, it goes into smaller jars and goes in the fridge. But as I say, every single day I'll eat something fermented because the thing is with me now, I've been doing it for so long, it makes you feel so good that if you don't, you just don't feel right. Yeah. And our cravings come from our gut. So our wee gut buddies are sending messages to our brain to tell us to go and eat more of their food source. So it changes your taste buds as well.
Absolutely. So what we're interested in is basically the bacteria within these fermented foods. Mm. And we call the really beneficial bacteria in these things probiotics. But we can only use the term probiotic when there's a demonstrated health benefit conferred by a well-defined and a characterized live microorganism. Now, this is why you won't see every single yogurt in the shelf calling itself probiotic. So in order to be able to label something probiotic, basically, there's got to be a stipulated health benefit, which is evidence-based, of a specific strain in a well-controlled interventional study. And that has to be, with proven safety, products. So essentially, in order to go through those hoops, a lot of the companies that produce fermented foods may not have the money to back that up with all the research that needs to be done. And as a result, we won't have everything on the shelf labelled probiotic, even though some of it may indeed still have plenty of those probiotic bacteria by the time the shelf life ends. So, first of all, do we care about fermented foods being called probiotic? And what sort of quantity of bacteria are in these fermented foods that we're looking at, Janice?
Right, well, that's actually all very interesting, Sheena. But the thing is, if you ferment anything at home, it is very difficult to know exactly how many probiotics are in it. If you take a sauerkraut, for example, fermented cabbage, it depends very much on the quality of your ingredients. It depends on how long you've fermented it for. It depends on the temperature that you've fermented it for. So there's various things that can actually, impact the level of bacteria, not just the amounts, but the strains of bacteria. Mm-hmm. And again, if you look at a fermented veg like a sauerkraut, it starts off when you create the sauerkraut with the salt, we're creating a salt brine. So it starts off with one specific strain. It's all lactobacillus species, mm-hmm. but it starts off with the Leuconostoc is the first one that starts off. Once that starts to get going, it brings the pH down a wee bit because it creates lactic acid. And then it's almost like a relay race. So you get the next lot of bacteria come in, they pass the baton to the next lot and the next ones. So if you have a sauerkraut that you fermented for 2 weeks, it's going to have a different balance of bacteria than one that you've fermented for 6 weeks. Right. But they're all beneficial. They're all good. It's just different. It's a different mm-hmm. balance. So you can't really say how many bacteria are in them. I would actually love to have some of mine tested just to check. But the fact of it is, though, these are traditional foods that have benefits for health in other ways other than the fact that they contain live probiotics.
Yeah. So what are the other ways that the fermented foods will benefit us?
Well, to be honest, anything that's fermented has been broken down, pre-digested, mm-hmm. transformed by bacteria into superfoods. Mm-hmm. So, for example, sauerkraut, cabbage is really incredibly good for us to start with. We ferment it with some salt, and what happens is the bacteria break everything down. The vitamin C content shoots up by a massive amount. Everything becomes more bioavailable. It's magic. That's all I can say. Mm. It is a magical microbial process. If you're looking at kefir, that can have up to 40 different strains of bacteria and yeast. And what kefir does is it tends to calm the immune system down because it's all different strains of bacteria and yeast. Mm-hmm. And from my point of view, the more of these foods that we can get into our diet, the more benefits that we have.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that there's so many companies out there clamoring to produce probiotics for us, you know, should people consider these, or should people go down the fermented food line?
Well, that is, again, a question that I get asked a lot. And, okay, probiotics now, it's like everything else has become quite big business. And the thing is, you can buy probiotics that are just very general, that they don't have proven health benefits. If you look at probiotics as a like a genus, and then you need to have the species and then the strain, it's almost like looking at, okay, there's animals, and then you take the as a dog, and then you can look at what is the strain. So mm-hmm. between, you know, if you've got an animal, a dog, the difference between a Chihuahua and a Rottweiler is quite a lot. And it's the same with bacteria. Especially lactobacillus and bifidobacteria are the two main groups that are quoted. But within those genus and within those species, there's so many different strains, and not all of them have a benefit. And the ones that do don't have different benefits. So you have to be very, very careful about what you're actually looking for. Mm-hmm. And then you have to choose one that has been scientifically proven to have to confer a benefit. But in my opinion, you can actually increase the good bacteria in your own gut by introducing some fermented foods, because then you'll get a better balance, in my opinion, because what you're doing is you're sending in reinforcements with the ferments. So again, going back to fermented veggies, you're actually sending in reinforcements of lactobacillus bacteria along with their food source. Mm-hmm. So you get more benefits, but not more, you'll get different benefits. And for me, because fermented foods are not a quick fix, and a lot of people think that with taking probiotics, they think, oh, well, my gut health isn't great, so I'll just take a probiotic capsule and that'll be me sorted. Firstly, absolutely not, because even if those probiotics get into your gut, they still need a food source. Mm-hmm. So they still need to have a source of fibre. And a lot of the probiotics you buy now actually have inulin or different prebiotic fibres, which will, you know, give them a better chance of establishing and doing something in the gut. But I do find, again, for me, I'm really quite old-fashioned. I like to go back to traditional processes and look at the people that have been using and eating and drinking these foods and drinks for years, and they have way better health than we do. Mm-hmm. You know, our health, chronic health problems are just, they're escalating into really at an alarming rate. Yeah. And it all comes back to gut health.
Mm. And I suppose the average person in the UK isn't really consuming much in the way of fermented foods, apart from the odd yogurt. And of course, the majority of the yogurts that are consumed may not actually be particularly probiotic, because they are so highly sweetened and they may be pasteurised as well.
And that's actually very true, Shane. And especially there used to be when it was like the little Actimel type drinks. And again, they're dairy based, they're full of sugar, and you're lucky if you've got one strain or perhaps two strains, as opposed to homemade kefir, which can have up to 40 and there's zero sugar in it.
Yep. And even comparing to a plain natural yogurt, which will have about four strains of species in them. And will have a much higher quantity because it's unsweetened.
Absolutely.
Because the sugar knocks out the bacteria in the product, doesn't
it? Exactly.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. There is evidence based. I know that people always sort of are desperate to see the evidence. So when it comes to probiotics, this is where the drug companies have the advantage, because they can say, well, you know, where's the evidence for fermented foods? Here's the evidence for our probiotics. And, you know, I did look up evidence base for fermented foods because of this, because, you know, we do think that communities that eat fermented foods on a regular basis are healthier. And, you know, that has been noted in retrospective studies of different populations consuming different fermented foods in the past. And of course, that's where all the sort of interest in fermented foods came from hundreds of years ago, when they looked at the Bulgarian society that, you know, ate a lot of fermented yogurt, for example. But interestingly, there are good studies that have looked into fermented foods, and there is evidence base for that. So what I discovered with just a very sort of short search, really, I found a cross-sectional study which looked at fermented food intake, which is fermented vegetables during early childhood. And there was a significant reduction in childhood atopy from that one study, looking at people that consumed them. Milk kefir is actually really highly studied, and there's actually quite a lot of evidence base for it. And you know, I was actually quite blown away about what milk kefir does. And as you say, there's over 40 different strains of bacteria in milk kefir, which is quite impressive. And because, of course, you're consuming it with the milk itself, it's got its energy source and its food source with it. It's quite easily digested as well. And actually, that has been shown to improve your digestion, improve your tolerance to lactose. So people that are lactose intolerant can actually improve that by having kefir more regularly. Interestingly, milk kefir has been shown to reduce cholesterol, reduce blood pressure, reduce inflammation in the body, and reduce your sugar levels. And it's been shown to be highly antibacterial, antioxidant, anti-carcinogenic, and anti-allergy. So there's quite a lot going on with that milk kefir. It seems to be quite a holistic sort of approach. Kimchi is an interesting one. Kimchi is the fermented vegetables and widely eaten in sort of Korea and South Asia. And kimchi has been shown to actually really improve your glucose metabolism, especially in pre-diabetics. Mm-hmm. So there's studies on that. And it does enhance your gut microbiome as well. Sourdough bread's another very interesting one, because when we look at sourdough bread, because it's cooked, you're actually destroying the bacteria, or you're killing them. You're not destroying them completely. You're killing the bacteria within the sourdough. And so people had thought that would then lose the benefit, you know, for your gut. But interestingly, it then becomes a postbiotic. And a postbiotic is a killed bacteria that is still within its ecosystem, with its metabolic byproducts. And when we ingest killed bacteria in this form with its metabolic byproducts, we still get benefit. And actually, they feed the beneficial bacteria in our gut. And it has been shown to be quite beneficial to our health as well. Improves the digestibility of gluten. And reduces the burden of gluten on your gut, and actually is very helpful for people with IBS. So there's quite a lot of evidence, and that was just a very short amount of research that I did into this. And I think that there's plenty there, just even within that short study, to show me that fermented foods are certainly beneficial to our health, and I don't really see any great reason for people to not get into fermented foods. But what I am wondering about is how those fermented foods can really change our gut microbiota. And I'm just wondering what other effects that they have on our gut microbiota are. And Janice, could you just tell us a little bit more about what these fermented foods do to our gut microbiota?
Well, the thing is, to be honest, I've said really anything that is fermented is going to have live bacteria, apart from sourdough, as you quite rightly said. With sourdough, the magic happens before you bake it, because the bacteria in the sourdough starter break down a lot of the gluten. They also break down the bond between phytic acid and all the minerals, which means all the minerals are bioavailable. So sourdough bread is much more digestible. The minerals are more bioavailable in it. It's high in resistant starch. And as you say, it actually feeds your gut bacteria, because it's actually a great source of food for our gut. Fermented veggies, again, really get into the gut and really support immune health, because 70% of our immune system is in the gut. Mm-hmm. Also, our mental health. There's been so much other research. And Vanessa Kimball, who actually runs the sourdough school, she has done lots of research. She's actually doing a PhD in it, actually, mm-hmm. and looking at the impact of sourdough bread on mental health. Okay. Because again, it's that, you know, gut brain axis, mm-hmm. that sourdough bread is real food. It sustains and feeds the good bacteria in mm-hmm. our gut and gives us a better balance. And for me, it's all about balance, which is an individual thing, but it obviously makes sense to have more of the good bacteria mm-hmm. and less of the bad ones. And what a lot of the ferments are doing is they're literally sending in reinforcements of the good bacteria to keep your balance right. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's the way that I look at it. And every single thing that you do has got a different benefit. Mm-hmm. Kombucha, as I said, works like an internal hoover. It clears toxins from the system. Kefir is different. It kind of calms the immune system down. Mm-hmm. Fermented veggies get into the gut and help with digestive issues, with boosting the immune system. They all work in slightly different ways, but the reality of all of it is they're all supporting a better balance of good bacteria in the gut. Mm-hmm. And we know now with the research that's coming out that every aspect of our health comes back to our gut health.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything that we should be concerned about when consuming fermented foods, Janice? Because I've always thought they're perfectly safe and obviously do us more good than anything. So is there any potential harm from fermented foods?
Well, I guess if you're making them yourself at home, I mean, the thing is, the only thing you need to worry about is mold, which is perfectly visible and shouldn't happen if you're fermenting things in the correct way. People are different. Everyone is different. Everyone reacts differently to ferments. A lot of people are very sensitive to them, because if you think about it, what you're doing is when you start to, and sometimes people go a wee bit overboard with it because they get too excited about all the health benefits. So if you sat and ate, for example, a jar of kimchi, what you're doing is you're sending in masses of different probiotic bacteria that are going to get into your gut and displace the bad ones. So they don't go without a fight sometimes. So you could end up having a bit of a healing crisis. Mm-hmm. And that just means that you've overdone it. You've taken too much. So you have to just pare it back a bit. It's the same with kombucha. If you drank a whole bottle of kombucha, it's massively detoxifying. Mm-hmm. So you'll end up in the toilet, you're whatever, you know, but it doesn't mean it's not okay. But people that have a problem with histamine, fermented foods sadly are out. So it's nothing is a one size fits all.
Okay.
You have to, you know, try the foods yourself and see how your own balance is, and just tune back in with your own gut and your own body and mm-hmm. see how you feel. Personally, myself, because I've been eating these foods for so long, I can eat as many fermented foods as I like. I can drink kombucha till the cows come home, and I'm okay with it. But I would never say to anyone to sort of, you know, just blindly start eating jars of fermented veggies and knocking back the kombucha. But as I said, we're all different, so we need to pace it. But in terms of safety, the only thing, as I said, if you were making anything at home, the only thing you really need to worry about is mold.
And just take care with that. Right.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I mean, you know, you're seeing a lot of people following you now, taking a real interest in their gut health for a variety of different health reasons of their own. I'm certainly seeing it as a GP, you know, people that have had chronic sort of gut problems are now taking a real interest in fermented foods as a way of getting better and healing their gut. So could you give us some examples of people using your ideas on fermented foods to help their digestion, help their gut health, and help their overall body health? So what have you experienced?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the most profound things that I have come across is someone who is a member in my wellness hub, and she has pretty severe ulcerative colitis, really quite bad digestive issues, and really just not feeling great at all on any level, because that massively impacts every other area of your health. She had come along to me. She started introducing fermented veggies, sauerkraut, kombucha, and again had got quite carried away, totally loved all of it, did all of it. All her symptoms went away. She went to the consultant. They checked. All the inflammation was gone. Mm-hmm. She felt absolutely incredible. She had loads of energy. She looked about 10 years younger. But then what happens is a lot of the time we get out of the way of doing the things that help us. Mm-hmm. She went off on holiday. She was away for 2-3 months. She stopped doing the kombucha. She stopped doing the fermented veggies, and all the symptoms came back with a vengeance.
Gosh, wow.
So that again and again, she contacted me to tell me that and said, well, I know that the last time I managed to reverse all of these issues with these incredible foods. So she just did exactly the same again, and all the symptoms went away.
Fantastic.
But that just shows you, though, that it's not a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely not think, oh, well, I'll just eat fermented foods for a month and I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because our gut microbiome is not a static thing. It changes all the time according to, you know, exercise, relationships, stress levels, the food that we're eating. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. But for me, the reason behind the Wellness Hub is to introduce changes that people can do and stick with.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, when you do start to notice differences, you just want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because again, that comes back to these bacteria who are incredible, because they then send messages to your brain to tell you to go and eat more of it. So I've had people in the wellness hub, that two or three people that have reverse digestive issues, people that have lost weight effortlessly that weren't trying to lose weight, people whose skin has cleared up, people with chronic constipation, now regular as clockwork, people feeling much brighter, energized, more. It's just, it's on every single level. And the wonderful thing is, when your gut starts to find a better balance, everything improves.
Mm-hmm.
You sleep better, your skin improves, you'll have more energy, your weight will stabilize, mm-hmm. you make better choices for yourself. And for me, it's a magical thing. I can't explain. It is just a magical thing,
mm-hmm.
because it also strengthens your own gut intuition,
mm-hmm.
because then when you listen and you actually think, well, if I eat these foods, it's going to make me feel better. Again, it's your gut microbes,
yeah.
that are creating that. You're feeling good, so you're going to make a better choice for
mm-hmm.
yourself,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to if your gut's overrun with candida, whatever, you're making bad choices because those bacteria, they're telling your brain to go and eat, shove donuts down your face and eat sugar and stuff, because that feeds them.
Uh-huh.
So it's the opposite that you get from fermented foods, because all you're doing is strengthening the good guys. It's like you've got a massive army in your gut that are, you know, looking out for you, that are fighting inflammation, that they're, you know, creating B vitamins, mm-hmm. vitamin K, sending messages to your brain, creating, you know, serotonin, all our happy hormones. It all comes from the gut.
Fantastic, fantastic. So on the whole, we are pretty certain then that fermented foods seem to be pretty beneficial with little downsides. So next, and Siobhan, I hope you're still there. You haven't taken too much of your kombucha and you've not had to run to the loo.
Yes.
But Siobhan, you're going to tell us a little bit of research. Tell us what have you been looking at this week?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I just wanted to say one thing on the back of that. First of all, that I can vouch, Sheena has been raving about your fermented food and how delicious it is. And I think that's kind of really important, because quite often people, Sheena
you
wasn't
have to
sort
come
of a,
and try some then.
I have already worked out how long it will take me. You're 480 kilometres away, and I reckon 6 hours I can be there. So, you know, I'm coming up to taste this stuff.
You just come up any time at
absolutely.
All. I would be absolutely delighted.
So I know it's delicious, but what I wanted to ask is, obviously working with both jobbing GPs, and we've got this sort of big problem with people's health and nutrition. We've got a lot of food poverty, a lot of people who can't afford fancy foods. And I just wondered if you could say a sentence or two about how you feel this fits into people with a low income, who maybe see fermented foods as fancy pants stuff that only middle class people afford, and it's like a luxury. What would you say there?
I would say sauerkraut, all you need is a cabbage, some salt and a glass jar. Cabbages are cheapest chips, are available all year round. And, you know, again, I get that all the time, that people saying they can't afford it. Fermented foods are among the cheapest foods you can make. You can literally ferment any vegetable. If you go for seasonal vegetables, all you need is salt. Everyone has salt, and a glass jar. You don't need fancy equipment. It's really very straightforward. And if you add in forage foods to that, that's free.
So exactly.
Wild garlic season is coming, so that's totally free food.
Right. So what we're saying is incredibly healthful, very affordable and absolutely delicious. So kind of, you know, there's no brainer, isn't it? So what I'd like to do now is just, I'm just going to talk about research paper. And I love this research paper. I've got you both in mind when I chose it. It's one of my favourite fermented food ones. It is from August 2021. It was published in Cell. Its title is Gut Microbiota Targeted Diets Modulate Human Immune Status. And it combines two of my favourite groups of people. So one is the Sonnenberg Lab. For any listeners who haven't heard about the Sonnenbergs, they're a fantastic husband and wife team. Erica and Justin Sonnenberg, you should look them up. They're microbiologists and immunologists. They have written a brilliant book called The Good Gut Diet, which gives you loads of tips and takes you through the whole gut microbiome history and practical ways in which you can improve your health. Now, they are mainly scientists who use mice or animal models. Now, animal models are very controlled environment, so they've done a lot of work on low-fiber diets in mice, and they show that when you don't have enough fiber, you get a very thin mucus layer in your barrier, and you let lots of molecules through, which cause inflammation. And we all know that low-grade inflammation is one of the main pathological issues with lots of non-communicative chronic diseases that we have nowadays. And the other person involved is Chris Gardner, who is a professor of human nutrition studies. And I really like his work because he often really pushes real food in free-living people. He uses a lot of dietary patterns, and he tries to make all his research really generalizable, sort of off the back of the paper, really, so that we can take this stuff into our lives today. Now, he doesn't do animal studies, but I know he's become more involved in the gut microbiome. He's now on the ZOE board, the scientific advisory board there. So he's got more interested in the gut microbiome. And I got the feeling that the Sonnenbergs are getting a bit fed up whenever they show their brilliant research. Everyone goes, yeah, well, it's mice, who cares? So they are keen to get into the world of human studies. Now, you kind of imagine if they were both at Stanford University that they would know each other well and be communicating. But we know that everyone works in silos and kind of, you know, you can be across the corridor from each other and not really talk. And they actually, Chris Gardner and Justin Sonnenberg actually met at a meeting they were both lecturing at and got chatting over the cup of coffee, and each realized that they wanted to kind of, you know, delve into each other's expertise. And they decided it would be fun to do a study that combined both their areas. They wanted to look at diet and its impact on humans, their gut microbiome composition, and also their immune function and whether it increased or decreased sort of inflammatory levels. But as you know, and Janice, you'll be aware of this, the issues of cost and funding for these sort of studies, I mean, no one's really interested. They're not going to make anyone big bucks. But they did manage to get a small amount of funding, and they do have access to state-of-the-art next-generation sequencing of gut microbiome. And also, there is a brilliant immune lab at Stanford that does incredible immune profiling. So Sheena and I, when we order bloods for patients and want to look at their, you know, inflammatory status, will be, if we're lucky, we can have an ESR and a CRP. But these sort of things that they have at Stanford, I think they have 90 cytokine levels they can profile, you know, so they can really look in depth. So they finally did get some money together and they put out an advert. And Sheena, I want you to imagine that you answered this advert. You decided you'd like to be in this trial. Janice, you did as well. You thought, yeah, that sounds interesting. So you get chosen for the trial and you're sitting in the room on the first day and you look around you and you see that over 70% are women. They're all white. They're all educated and they're all about 50 years old. So obviously, you know, these sort of studies do attract certain people. They take a time commitment there as well because you have to be around for 14 weeks. But in fact, actually, Sheena and Janice, you wouldn't be allowed in the trial because your diets are too good. So you have to have a kind of lowish fiber intake and not have much fermented food. So actually, you would be kicked out. You'd be kicked out quickly. But imagine a day, the days, Janice, when you weren't having fermented food, yeah, and Sheena, you weren't into your kind of plant-based diet. Go back a few years. So Sheena, at that time, in the dim and distant past, maybe you were having 20 grams a day of fiber. Now in the UK, it's meant to be 30 grams, but we run woefully short of that. I think about sort of only about 10% of people reach those 30 grams, and it actually should be more. But in the USA, it's even less. I think it's only 5%. So you get put, Sheena, you're delighted, you get put into the high fiber arm, okay? You get randomized into that arm. There's 18 of you in there and you get told, right, we want you to push your 20 grams up to 45 grams. You get you're spoken to by a dietitian and given lots of advice, and they don't care how you do it, fruit and veg, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, just do it, okay? So Janice, you're happy because you get put into the fermented arm. You've got to not particularly increase your fiber, but you get told they want you to boost your fermented food intake. Now, the people in your group, Janice, including yourself at that time, have maybe half a portion a few times a week. It's mostly a bit of, you know, it's usually yogurt. So you get told about all the different fermented foods. You can choose whichever ones you want. Doesn't matter. They're not fussy. But the dietitians sort of point you towards sort of good sources. Now, none of these people were making their own fermented foods, Janice. So I know you would be out in the kitchen making it all, but they're the supermarket bought. Going from sort of half a portion once a week, they were told six portions a day. And that was quite interesting. Not only that, but they all did this. So wow. Sheena, your arm, everyone got over 45 grams a day, okay, of fibre. And Janice, in your arm, they all did 6 portions a day. Now, these portions, I mean, it sounds a lot, but maybe like kimchi or sauerkraut, one portion would be maybe like 1/4 cup. So I suppose they made a big lot and had it, you know, lunch and supper. And then the kefir and kombucha, it only needed, I think, 6 ounces. So, you know, quite small. And I think, a bottle of kombucha would be 2 or 3 servings. So they obviously sort of have their bits in the fridge and just put it on top of everything. But they all managed to get up to 6 portions, some people more. So they saw the dietitians every 2 weeks. They had their stools taken every 2 weeks. And they actually had to, you'll be delighted to know, Sheena and Janice, you have to do your stool and you keep it in the freezer at home. You have to pack it between ice packs. So you can imagine how happy the rest of your family were. And you do not want to be forgetting that, do you, ladies? But, you would store it up and someone came to collect it at the end. And then you have your bloods done about 7 times. Now, they do bloods for everything under the sun, but we're going to focus on these cytokines, these inflammatory markers. So it's a 14-week study, but the 2 weeks are ramping up and 2 weeks at the end relaxing. So it's actually only for 10 weeks, the actual, you know, the in-depth study. So you're very happy, you're doing well, you get to the end of this 14-week study. So we're going to start with Sheena. She's all excited, she's sitting there. Sheena, you're probably a bit smug, aren't you? Because you love your complex carbohydrates and your fiber, and you know what they're going to do to your gut. So what do you think they might do to your gut composition? What are you hoping in terms of diversity? What do you think, Sheena?
Oh, I'm looking for way more diversity, And, you know, a big lot of bifidos and more lactobacilli in there, loving all the fibers that I'm giving them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I would have thought that, you know, way more beneficial microbes in my gut.
And your inflammatory markers, what do you think might be happening to those? Do you think they'd be going up, more inflammatory or less inflammatory?
Definitely down.
Well, I kind of thought that as well.
I would say much less inflammatory, definitely, with all that fiber.
Yeah, and that is on the basis of lots of animal studies and lots of human studies. That is what you would expect. Now, I think the Stanford lot, I think they kind of were presuming that because that's what's happened in all their mouse studies, but they were a little bit disappointed. They only threw the fermented foods in just for fun, really. But so there were some good things. There wasn't a huge significant change in diversity, interestingly. So there was a big increase in what they call caszymes, which is carbohydrate digesting enzymes. And the capacity for those did go up a lot. And the short chain fatty acids increased, so the function. But the diversity hadn't changed as much as they expected. And the inflammatory markers, yeah, but not as much as they were hoping. And in fact, it sort of divided into groups. And those people who didn't have a good gut microbiota composition, so maybe not that great a profile of really beneficial bugs in their gut to start with, didn't seem to be able to cope with this extra fiber or know what to do with it. Now, they wondered whether this was they just needed more time or whether this idea of they having missing microbes, they were given all the, it would be like giving builders, you know, a whole load of bricks, but if you don't have the brickies there, they're not able to build the walls. So you're giving them all these extra fiber, but you don't have the bacteria there or the other microbes there that are able to do stuff with it. And they did find that a subgroup of people who did have a better gut microbiota composition, they were the subgroup of people who did do better, who did increase diversity and did have a reduction in inflammatory markers. So a little bit disappointing. And it just shows that actually there are subsets. It's very much personalized and you've got to have the microbes and you've got to have the foods as well. You can't just, you know, maybe need longer, but maybe some people are actually possibly even permanently missing these microbes and maybe we need to be looking at that. Now, then we're over to Janice. So Janice, all excited about her results. So this was incredible, okay? Gut microbiota composition, diversity through the roof, okay? Inflammatory markers, you know, over 70% of them way down. And in fact, when I heard the Sonnenbergs and Chris Gardner talking about it on a podcast recently, they kind of were joking about it because they kept going, have we got this right? Can you just check that you haven't got this the wrong way round? And they were kind of, you know, they kind of, yeah. So actually, they were really blown away by this. So we know lots of cytokines, one of the most important ones in interleukin-6, IL-6. So, you know, it was more... I think Chris Gardner was really excited because this is so generalizable. So across the whole cohort, it had increased diversity and reduced inflammatory markers. and in a really short amount of time. So that's sort of very interesting. But it was small numbers, you know, they didn't have controls and it was for a short time. But it does mean it's kind of exciting because it's actionable now. And it's this whole idea of synergy. You need the microbes and the fiber. And also this idea, listening to Janice really put this into my head as you were talking so beautifully there about all this interesting stuff that, you know, what happens in our colon, all this magic alchemy that happens when we give our indigenous microbes the right food. It's almost when you're fermenting food, it's almost like you're doing what should be happening in your colon, but you're doing it outside the colon and then putting it into the colon. So it's almost like you've got this, you know, fermenting factory, and that's what our guts should be doing as well. So, and also the other important point they made was why they were so excited is because things like drugs and probiotics, which are almost drug-like, you know, you need these RCTs. It has to be rigorous. You need regulatory approval. It's going to be years and years working through one by one all these probiotics or drugs for various things. Whereas diet, you know, healthy plant-based diet, we know it's great. We've got so much evidence for it being fantastic in loads of other areas. You know, there's no side effects, only good ones. There's loads of other benefits. It's low cost, as you said. You know, we're talking very sort of cheap, available vegetables. And, you know, the impact it has on your gut microbiome is incredible. So it's kind of really exciting to see studies like that. And there are very few of them. And as you say, Janice, my kombucha here is very different from yours. I think mine's delicious. I'm just trying to persuade my family. Mine's ginger and cayenne pepper. You know, mine will be different from yours. I will have fermented it in different ways, put different things in, you know, so it's very difficult to compare in studies. So what do you think about that, Janice?
Well, I have to say, I'm not surprised that the fermented food had more benefit than just increasing the fibre. Because again, as I said, really, these food, they're like rocket fuel for our good gut bacteria. They just work on so many levels. And the other thing is, in my opinion, they become addictive. So you do, once you start eating them, you want to keep eating them.
Yeah.
So it's not a quick fix. That is something that you gradually just want to keep doing because you just feel so good. And then once you understand the health benefits that they have, why wouldn't you do it?
Absolutely. So what about you, Sheena? Are you a bit upset about your fibre arm or what do you think of this paper?
Yeah, but it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you're just getting such a variety of organisms with fermented foods and you know, the fibres alongside it. So yeah. Whereas you know, just putting the fibre in there, it really does depend on what sort of an ecosystem you're landing it into. And, you know, so many people these days, you know, with C-section births, formula feeding, processed foods, you know, they've got such a diminished bacterial load anyway. You know, that may explain why they had such a poor response to the fibre. So, yeah, no, it's really, really interesting, isn't it? And great to see some really good research on fermented foods and the benefits of them. And we just need to see more of that, don't we? More research into this really, really fascinating area. And in the meantime, I think we're just going to scoff loads of fermented foods.
Yes, well, Siobhan should definitely come for lunch. So I can do you a fermented feast.
I'm looking at the train times right now. So listen, thanks so much for joining us today, Janice. I mean, you know, it's been fascinating, this whole conversation, just listening to the way you talk and your absolute passion about this whole area is kind of very, very inspiring. So we're going to wrap up now. What three messages would you like to leave the listeners with today about fermented foods? What do you think the important things are?
Fermented foods are absolutely delicious. Fermented foods will transform your health. And fermented foods are really simple and inexpensive to make at home. So you should eat them and drink them.
Wow. That's pretty clear and very, fantastic. So I think you might be kind enough to leave us one of your recipes. So for any listener who maybe this is new to fermented food and hasn't really tried anything, are you going to leave us something that they can try?
I certainly am. This is a recipe I actually made up myself. I call it Indian-inspired carrot kraut. And it's sauerkraut made with cabbage, but you can also make kraut with carrots. Carrots are available all year round. They're pretty cheap to buy. Most people like carrots. So this is essentially just grated carrots with salt and then Indian spices added. So it's like turmeric, ginger, What else? Chili, garlic. So all the things that are also anti-inflammatory. So you're taking the carrots, you're fermenting them with the salt, with all the other additional things. And it's a fast ferment. It only takes 7 days and it is absolutely delicious. So that's the recipe that I'm going to leave you with.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Thank you so much, Janice.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been...
Not at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. I do have to say, I love talking about fermented foods with people that get it. You guys obviously get it. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come along.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks again. We're going to say goodbye and we'll join you next time for the next Microbiome Medics podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Microbiome Medics podcast. We really hope you enjoyed the content and we welcome your feedback. We'd love to hear any suggestions you might have for microbiome topics that you'd like us to cover. And we also appreciate listeners' questions and will endeavour to answer them in the next podcast.
So if you want to progress this learning further, look at the Gut Microbiome for Clinicians. It's an online course on bslm.org.uk, which will take you on a much deeper dive into the gut microbiome.